Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
As you know, Sweden has taken a markedly different attitude towards the pandemic, largely keeping their society open. But according to Keith Begg, that has also involved stifling dissent towards this approach. Keith has lived in Sweden for the past 8 years and is married to a Swede. But when he set up a Facebook group critical of the government strategy, the threats started arriving. Keith didn't feel safe there anymore and he's now back in his native Limerick. And he joins us now on News Talk. Afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Now, when you first set up Media Watchdogs of Sweden, what was going on in Sweden that troubled you?
Basically, in a nutshell, Sweden seemed to go against all the established signs, even though the virus was kind of an unknown factor. So it failed to implement any type of lockdown or to follow the WHO recommendations. And in early March, I think after Italy, Denmark was the first country to lock down, then followed by Norway. And Sweden kept going on with large concerts, etc., such as the final of their Eurovision selection entry, which had about 30,000 people. So we became very aware early on that Sweden, the authorities and the government were not using scientific-based evidence to leverage their response and COVID-19 strategy.
Yeah, now, and obviously this has been, the difference in the Swedish approach has been much reported around the world. In the Swedish media, was the media particularly critical or not of this?
That is an excellent question, and it was one of the reasons we set up MeWas. The Swedish media benefited by a government bailout to the tune of 700 million kroner, which is about 70 million euro, while at the same time, hospital and frontline workers were denied PPE, and elderly care homes were devoid of oxygen supplies, with costs being used as a factor. Yet the government bailed out the Swedish media for 70 million, as I just stated, and it became very apparent that most of the media became nothing more than a mouthpiece for the Swedish government and the Swedish Public Health Authority. And that has been one major factor that has actually driven the establishment of MeWas, because we needed to fact check everything.
There were no critical voices at all.
Some, I mean, it was very, very sporadic. I mean, there were some media outlets, such as the Gothenburg Post, which was quite critical. But the critical voices were very, very minimal. And you're also dealing with, unfortunately, a kind of atmosphere of hyper-nationalism and exceptionalism. So a lot of the journalists who were writing in a very, very kind of hyper-nationalistic way, and they seemed to have lost the ability to report ethically. It became more of a defense of Sweden and everything around Sweden, as opposed to telling the story. And I would go so far as to say Swedish media, it's not only been gaslighting, misrepresenting information, it has almost outright lied. And only recently an article was published in one of Sweden's main newspapers, where an opinion was given that long-term COVID is nothing more than just a cultural illness. It's all in the people's head, because at the end of the day, there's an estimation of 160,000 people in Sweden with long-term COVID. So it provides evidence, really, that the herd immunity strategy has not worked.
So you set up MeWas, and it was a Facebook group, and you kept it private. Why did you keep it private?
Well, basically, through March and April, many of us had been in other Facebook groups, and we had been absolutely vilified, attacked for any criticism of the Swedish strategy. So it was mainly foreigners who were initially counteracting the strategy. So we set up the private Facebook group so we could focus on advocacy and basically protect people who were vilified and smeared and received threats just merely for voicing their disdain and their and complaining, not complaining, I would say, but basically challenging the Swedish strategy, which was so off the mark compared to almost every other European country.
And your advocacy, what form did that take? Because I understood you were writing to MEPs and things like that.
Yeah, exactly, Sean. I mean, you know, writing letters and emails, it's the oldest form of advocacy and activism in the world. So basically, we were literally a ragtag group of 200 people from all walks of life, including parents in Sweden who were forced to send their children to school during a pandemic. There was a couple of doctors, epidemiologists, human rights activists. So basically, we were doing this. I mean, what was happening was that the Swedish Public Health Authority and the government were feeding information and quite incorrect and misleading information to international news outlets about how the strategy was succeeding. So we just couldn't sit back and watch this unfold because, for instance, you know, Sweden has constantly reiterated that opening schools hasn't led to a huge spread in the virus, that children are not drivers of the virus, nor do they infect adults. So this was pretty much pseudo-scientific, and a lot of the reports were not even peer-reviewed. So we, of course, we wrote some letters. I mean, we're only 200 members in a group. Some of us wrote articles, but not necessarily aligned to me was. I mean, like yourself, Sean, I'm sure you're in many Facebook groups. So the Swedish authorities and the Swedish Public State Radio decided then, oh, we need somebody to blame. So what better than a group of just 200 ordinary people from Media Watchdogs of Sweden?
Yeah. And so this was a reporter from Swedish Public Radio joined the group pretending to be somebody else. And so it seemed like you were portrayed as, is it too far to say, as a bunch of subversives, maybe even terrorists?
Absolutely, Sean. I mean, the number one problem is they infiltrated this private group. And you have to remember, in Sweden, it's a very consensus and conformist society with a very, very narrow opinion corridor. So it's used very effectively by the government and even ordinary people to kind of silence you, like tone policing. You know, what you say in Sweden can have really big repercussions. So if you fall outside of that narrow opinion corridor, you're deemed a subversive or a radical very, very quickly, where in Ireland it would be just seen as mainstream, you know.
It's when that report then came out, did it put you and all the other people in that Facebook group, you know, in a degree of peril?
Yeah, and I think people find this hard to believe. I mean, you know, we've been getting threats the whole year. I mean, that's nothing special. But, you know, especially the scientists there's 40 scientists who've been highly critical of the strategy, and they've been vilified throughout media. But the problem is, you know, I've worked for 10 years in communications for human rights. So I'm used to hearing the rhetoric from totalitarian states that we have worked, you know, to try and advance rule of law. So the same rhetoric was being used. We were referred to by one of the experts who has dominated media in Sweden as a threat to democracy. We've been referred to as destabilizing the Swedish image, even accused of, could our advocacy work cause people to incite crime? So it was absolutely off the charts. So I did not feel safe, but it was mainly from the rhetoric coming from the authorities in Sweden.
My word. And so you're back in Limerick now.
Yes, I mean, I felt I had to leave. Number one, my husband is here, and I received a letter in the post, and several of our members have received many threatening letters where I was referred to as a traitorous and nauseating bitch. And I just felt it wasn't safe to be at this address because we just didn't know what would transpire. And it got to the stage when I was walking down the street, and many other advocates would say similar. You were unnerved if a car pulled up against you. And I think what Sweden has demonstrated during this pandemic is exceptionalism and hubris. And It's about, there's two angles to the strategy in Sweden, and it's protecting the economy, but above all, protecting the Swedish image. That seems to be all important. So yes, we were vilified, but it actually kind of blew up in their face a little bit that, you know, a lot of Swedish experts and journalists came out in our defense, saying that some of them referred to it, it was a Stasi style attack on a group of just private citizens and residents in Sweden.
So you're back in Limerick now. Is your husband still in Sweden? Is he with you? And what did the two of you plan to do for the future?
He's still in Sweden. And I mean, of course, that was really, really difficult. I mean, a very difficult situation. I mean, but coming back to Ireland, you know, where it's not perfect and people don't think they're perfect, but you really see the solidarity and the unity in trying to suppress this virus. So I've got a job moving to Madrid over the next couple of weeks, and I'm hoping that my husband and my two cats, Honey and Elmo, I'll just plug them in there, will move to Madrid with us. But it has been a very traumatic experience. And it's not just me, it's many, many people, and the majority of people support the strategy in Sweden. And quite frankly, it's a scientifically, morally and ethically bankrupt society. So many of us foreigners just could not sit by and say nothing when we could compare what was happening in our home countries to the laissez-faire attitude in Sweden.
Has that reversed a bit in the last few weeks in Sweden?
You know, I've described it, they introduced a pandemic law, which I would say is about as useful as an underwater hairdryer, where you know, they don't serve alcohol after 8:30. But by and large, life has gone on pretty much normal here compared to other countries, certainly like Ireland. And even last week, the traffic from Stockholm to the ski slopes was up 900% on last year. So there seems to be so little unity. And, you know, those in risk groups and the elderly have been in the world's longest lockdown, our voluntary lockdown, because basically it's quite dangerous for them. I mean, masks are not mandated here. They're only recommended on public transport during weekdays between rush hour in the morning and evening, as if the virus has respect for the Swedish transport timetables. So there's a general fear. They keep talking about the psychological damage of lockdowns, etc. But so many elderly people and in risk groups have been psychologically scarred. And of course, there's been thousands of elderly people who have been involuntary euthanized with morphine, not even given a chance with oxygen. And that has been one of the major scandals of the Swedish strategy, in that it's been an apartheid system where the elite have the luxury of working from home or avoiding public transport, but the vast majority of people cannot do that.
Keith, we wish you well for you and your family when you all get to Madrid. Keith Begg, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.